haze of a drunken hour, but heaven knows I'm miserable now. I was looking for a job and then...
Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we spoke with British journalist Claire Boulderson about last week's vote in the UK to leave the European Union, a move that's been dubbed Brexit.
For some additional perspective from this side of the Atlantic, we turn now to our stalwart foreign policy contributor, Art Sear, who was with us in the studio. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Mitch. Thank you so much for inviting me back.
As someone who is a close observer of things on the world stage, how much were you surprised by the results of the Brexit vote?
Well, I thought they would stay in. The British, that is, would vote to stay in the European Union. Therefore, I hope our listeners don't turn off their radios or change the dial immediately. But people generally thought they would. The polls and the bookmakers seemed to be moving in the direction of Remain. It was a very, very close vote. And the consternation and continuing fallout indicates that it was more generally unexpected, including people who have said on the radio, yeah, I wanted to protest, but I never thought we would win.
Which is an interesting phenomenon, actually, that there were a lot of people who saw this as a symbolic vote.
Yes, be careful what you wish for. That's why that is true.
How do you see that vote reflected today in U.S. politics? I'm curious whether you see echoes of what many Britons say they wanted to accomplish in the support for, say, Donald Trump at this point.
Well, drawing parallels is a very favorite parlor game in this country, apparently, between them and us, since shortly after the conclusion of the American Revolution. It can be instructive. It also can be dangerous in the sense that it's a very different system. It's a very different culture. I don't think it's just my own strong biases and prejudices against Trump that make me think that there's nobody like that, nobody that crude, nobody that irresponsible, nobody that offensive running publicly in Britain, nor could anyone like that garner a large vote.
At the same time, though, is there simply something as basic as a dissatisfaction with the status quo that's at work?
Yes, indeed. You're quite right about that. And protest movements generally on the right almost, not quite fortunately, but almost elected a new president in Austria recently, where a lot of trouble for Europe started in the 20s and 30s, as we all know. In France, in Italy, where Prime Minister Renzi is facing an economy that has had very, very slow growth, nil growth, and lots of problems of corruption, not just since the Great Recession, but since they entered the euro around the turn of the century. So it resonates around the Atlantic area and to some extent in other countries. The Philippines has just elected a pretty autocratic, dictatorial new president.
Well, and this is a good point or a good question to ask about. Beyond the economic impact on Britain and the EU from this vote, what do you see as the impact of Brexit on politics beyond just Europe?
I think both in Europe and beyond, it's a wake-up call. I think there are positive dimensions to it. The European community is dominated by the member governments in terms of overall policy. But there is a large, rather removed, unelected bureaucracy in Brussels that is a favorite target of critics, but also can, it seems to me, to be given to issuing increasingly complex, often rather arrogant-seeming regulations for the rest of the community. In 2005, they proposed a constitution which was worthy of a banana republic in the sense that it was very, very long, very, very complicated, a great contrast to our very brief, very clear, very brilliant American Constitution. It was rejected by member governments, and the British government, led by Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair at the time, sort of led the charge against it quite rightly. This vote, Cameron's in Brussels on Tuesday, talking, and we know enough to know that it was a very, very vexatious session. A lot of irritated European leaders wanted the British to get out right now. It was more like a divorce than a discussion. That's very unwise. I think this is a wake-up call for the Europeans and also for leaders in Britain.
Would you say that there is a chance that either Brexit in total won't happen as was initially envisioned, or happens in a much slower way than some would like?
Probably the latter. It will be complicated given the complexity given the detail involved, Britain's involvement in the common market, it will take a while, if you're going to be responsible at all, to negotiate a departure. And during that time, the British especially, but also the Germans on the continent, may lead a pragmatic British-style effort to keep some involvement. It's in the interest of both sides. There is an European Free Trade Association, the EFTA, which is never mentioned, but is much more important now. The British could have joined the original six of the continental EEC when the Treaty of Rome came into effect in 57. They chose not to. In 60, they put in place an outer seven of countries that had nothing to do with one another in terms of major trade, except they surrounded the EEC. That faded, and the British, starting in 61, 62, tried to get in the European Union, European community at the time. It still exists. Norway in particular, but also Switzerland, Liechtenstein, I believe, and Iceland, they have a set of special trade arrangements with the EU, and Britain could fairly easily join that. The Wall Street Journal has also proposed that Britain be included in NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. I think there are lots of opportunities to further reduce what are today rather relatively limited barriers to trade.
One of the sub-headlines to this whole story in the days since the vote has been the veritable implosion of the major British political parties. As a point that Claire Boulderson, the journalist, made on this show just a few minutes ago. What are the similarities you see in the way British politics operates to the United States, and what are the key differences?
That's a key question. We're both historically two-party systems. Our parties, with the growth of pervasive primaries after 1968, have become much more ideologically uniform, to the detriment of good policy and good politics, in my view. But we retain two parties. The last really serious third-party challenge, and it was serious, was George Wallace way back in 1968. Ross Perot, other fringe candidates have not had that kind of major impact on the election. Britain has had traditionally a two-party system. Into the mid-20th century has had a slow-motion decline of two-party dominance. The two parties got just barely over 60% of the vote in the 2010 general election. The total is somewhere around there for 2015. The Liberal Democrats, previously the Liberal Party, have grown significantly until recently. They were part of the coalition government, the first since World War II. The Scottish National Party has wiped out the Labour Party. In Scotland, they are a rapidly growing third party, and they're already talking about negotiating a separate agreement with the EU or perhaps having a referendum. The breaking up of two-party dominance in Britain is quite profound and contrasts with our ability, for better or worse, to keep a two-party structure in place. It's a really important question.
Do you think, does the Brexit vote essentially signal the end of the two-party system as Britain has known it?
No, not necessarily. They still have a majority of the vote. It might well, since it's basically a conservative nation, and the vote was very close in this referendum, it may revive the two parties. I think the greatest political loss is David Cameron, who is, in my opinion, an extraordinarily gifted and successful political leader who, until this vote, had maneuvered through all kinds of internal challenges, tremendous, rather extreme hostility to the EU on the part of many younger members of his parliamentary party, the independence move in Scotland. He's handled things very well. I think he's demonstrated real responsibility, high intelligence, and considerable courage. I'm sorry to see him go, because more than ever, the Americans need that special relationship.
If you are a Wisconsin resident, you live in Milwaukee or Brown mm-hmm. Deer or Kenosha, why should or does Brexit matter to you?
Well, because if protection, we have a very, very important trade relationship with Britain and with Europe. If protectionism grows, it's our most important political ally and also our most important economic partner. That will have serious consequences. Of the enormous trade that bilateral between the U.S. and Britain, the vast bulk of it is in machinery, vehicles, the kinds of industries that are not telecom, that are not cell phones, that are not high-tech of a sexy sort, though they are computerized. Things change rapidly in the contemporary marketplace in every dimension, but those heavy industrial trading relationships I don't think will change quickly. And Britain remains, as it has since the 80s, a very open investment arena, a very open trade arena compared to the rest of the EU.
What does it take to make some of the uncertainty in global markets go away?
Well, I think if the media would shut down worldwide, with the exception, of course, of public radio and public television and the BBC and The Economist, things would be a lot better. The news is no longer the news in the 24/7 cycle. It's profit-driven entertainment news.
Are you saying that there's some out there who are inflating the story beyond its significance?
Yeah, and it's not just Fox News and not just other organs that are seen as more tabloid than news by many people, including me. No, we're really overdoing it. Take a look at how the stock markets, now globally integrated, including the futures markets, do over time. There has been no crash. And it seems to me that a lot of the media commentary has been overblown when you look at the actual facts of what's happening.
Art Zier, you are never overblown yourself. We thank you as always.
Well, thank you, Mitch. I agree with that. I hope we're right.
Art Zier is the Clausen Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business, and he's head of the Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. He is also our regular foreign policy contributor.